Are you a Hawkeye fan living in Story County? Do you feel isolated, like you're alone in a maze of red? Well, you're not the only one. And that's why we here at StoryCounty.news have launched a brand new section of our website, From the Hawkeye of the Storm, which will feature our weekly podcast, Brada's Branded Thoughts, as well as other Hawkeye-related content for all you Story County residents who bleed black and gold, or if you live in Western Iowa, Eastern Iowa, or somewhere else other than Ames and you're a Hawkeye fan, we'd love your support. All of our content is free, so again, give our Facebook page a follow, give it a like, and give our Twitter page a follow as well, @FromTheHawkeye, @FromTheHawkeye on Twitter. The more likes, the more follows, the more support we get, the more content we can continue to push out, and it's all free. It's From the Hawkeye of the Storm, hosted by StoryCounty.news, for the best Hawkeye content in the area.
Pleased to be joined by Ryan Winter of Sports Chat 503, talking Iowa versus Oregon coming up on Monday morning, and an early morning game for you folks out on the West Coast. Before we get to the preview of that game, I want to talk a little bit about what happened yesterday. Of course, Iowa getting a 12-point victory over the Grand Canyon Antelopes, but the Ducks were scheduled to play the VCU Rams and had a game canceled late because of COVID protocols. Ryan, again, appreciate you coming on here. Can you kind of share with our listeners, was that news surprising to you, or were there kind of rumblings of this in your neck of the woods?
Yeah, again, thanks for having me on as well. Appreciate it. Yeah, just that dang COVID is just chasing everybody this year, and to have it happen to the Ducks is just not surprising with all the West Coast stuff we've been dealing with. But I heard it was through their A-10 refs. The way the story was told me was that the refs all stayed together in the same motel for the A-10 tournament, and then they had guys test before they got into the bubble. But they said that there were guys that had been tested on VCU, and they had positive tests after they got into the bubble. And once that happens, it was already kind of in the bylaws that there was nobody going to be added. There was no extra teams waiting in the wings or anything if something had happened, which, you know, might have been nice. But it's just crazy that this year, you know, the one game that gets canceled, it affects Oregon, when Oregon had all these other issues dealing with their football season and everything else. And the basketball season had a tremendous amount of games canceled this year because of basketball. I mean, we had a game up here scheduled against UCLA, both teams ready to go, and the ref got COVID. So, I mean, it's like you just can't get out of the way of this COVID shadow this year. And I think it puts Oregon at a little disadvantage. I think it's important in any of these tournament settings to get your feet wet, start sweating a little bit, start to get the ball rolling a little bit. And waiting at the hotel is not going to be ideal for anybody. You can't really practice that much more. I guess they have a clear opponent and they're quote-unquote fresh, but I think it's a little bit of a disadvantage.
I tend to agree with you on that. I've had people say that, Oregon gets that extra day of rest. But again, when did Oregon play last?
Tournament March, you know, the second game of that tournament, they lost to the Beavs.
I tend to agree with you on that. I don't know how that plays into the hands of Oregon. But from everything, again, from the outside, what I've heard, what we've heard here in Iowa is that Oregon is coming on at the right time. They're finally healthy. Talk maybe a bit about the injury struggles. Were they injuries? Were they COVID? It sounds like they're finally healthy for maybe the first time this season.
Yeah. So this year, I mean, every year with Dana, you know, it's hard with modern basketball. You know how it goes of keeping a team together, keeping a team consistent, and having players stay. And when you're a successful program and people are going to leave early, that happens. But also at the same time, over the last maybe 5-6 years, Dana's really used the graduate portal, you know, and now that they have, you know, completely new rules around it, you might even see more of this. But, you know, we had a bunch of guys every year for the last maybe 5-6 years where it takes time to get this team gelled together. You know, they come in and you don't even really know who the team's going to be. And last year he replaced a bunch of guys and you knew who you were going to get. The one guy who everybody knew was going to be the guy was going to be Will Richardson. And the day before the first game, he breaks his thumb. So you start the year without the main point guard. I mean, right there's a huge hurdle. And you had Chris Duarte was a good player last year. You were expecting him to be a good player this year. And then you really didn't know what you were going to get with these guys who had been waiting. Eugene Amorui came in, played a great year, and played, I think, every game. LJ Figueroa came in, another guy on the grad transfer. But, you know, you really didn't know what you were getting. And so every year with Dana, what we see is, and Dana Altman is a absolute legend out here, you know, a Hall of Fame. I think he's got a spot already cemented. Amazing teacher of the game. And I just think that over time, it takes a while for him to gel. They run a little bit different type of offense, a little bit different type of defense. And they had some times with some COVID stuff. And then they had their big center go out with an ACL injury, Nafali Dante, who was starting to really come together into his own. And it's a shame there because we have another big man who came in and as a freshman, we really wanted to have those guys play together and learn to play together and work together. And it's just very difficult. You know, this is a perfect time to have your 6'11 starting center when playing against a guy like Garza. So it's just going to be interesting. You know, there was some time with some COVID stuff for sure. Guys missed games because of COVID, but it was just a very interesting year this year. They really couldn't get things going. And then finally at the end of the year, they had that game against USC where they did not play well. It was right after they beat Colorado. They had to add a game. Historically, only play two games a week, but then they had to add a game on a Monday after beating Colorado on a Saturday, and they just looked tired. USC ran them. And other than that, they did in the last, I think, probably 10 games, I think they won 9 of them. And then they lost to the Beavs in the tournament. But the Beavs got hot, and the Beavs are playing really well right now and just beat Tennessee. So I think the Ducks are fine. They're playing good right now. I wish they would have been able to have that first game and get a victory going into this game. It would have, I think, maybe even the playing field a little bit.
Was the fan base, I don't want to say comfortable, you're never comfortable in a tournament game. Of course, what we've seen over the last 3 days in the tournament is a testimony to that. But what was the overall feel from the fan base over the past week since the selection with VCU, obviously the first round opponent, Iowa, potential second round? Was it a draw that the Ducks liked?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you look, there's a bunch of different ways to look at this, obviously. You know, going into the Pac-12 tournament, the Ducks felt like they were pretty solid, somewhere between maybe a 5, 6, 7, 8 seed, somewhere in there. And so they didn't feel like they needed to win. In years past where they feel like they needed to win, they do well. They do win, they get into the tournament. So there didn't feel like there was a sense of urgency in the Pac-12 tournament. With the draw with VCU, felt like that was a pretty favorable draw. I was not that impressed. I went back and watched the A-10 tournament, was not that impressed with VCU. They have some talent. Don't get me wrong. Any team who's in this position is going to be good. But I felt like Oregon could stack up against them. And then, you know, the Iowa draw is really interesting because, you know, they're so dominant when they're good, but when they stale out a little bit, and I went back and watched some of those games where they had trouble, and you know, I think Oregon can play well against them. I don't know if it's going to be really the whole thing for Oregon is they have to be able to have that trap defense, that zone, full length, full court zone trap defense where they don't really turn people over that much. They just extend the shot clock a little bit. They delay the opponent's ability to start their offense where they want to. If they can get that going, I think they could possibly keep this thing going. But if Garza played like he did against Grand Canyon, throwing threes and shooting the ball, I mean, he was having his way there. So I tend to think that it's going to be a difficult matchup for the Ducks to be able to stop the Hawkeyes. But at the same time, Oregon's going to put a lot of pressure on Iowa. Oregon has four guys that are 6'6", athletic, can handle the ball, and have size. And not a normal 6'6", a 6'6" that looks like a grown man. And so they're going to have to put a 6'6" guy at some point in time on Garza. That's going to be guaranteed. They're not going to be able to hang with. I mean, they have some height. The freshman's going to play a little bit. That's Big Frank. He'll get some minutes. Maybe he uses some 5 fouls against Garza. But you have Chandler Lawson's going to be the main big man, and he's 6'8", and he's a thin 6'8". So Garza's going to be the dominant force in this game for sure for Iowa. So I feel like, you know, it's, again, as Duck fans, we're always supportive of our team. We think our team can win. But, you know, the way that it's played out so far, Pac-12's looking pretty good. Big Ten's not really as much right now. And so I think Iowa really needs to pick it up for the rest of their conference going forward. I think this could be a really, really good game. It's just, you know, matchups make up fights, you know, and I think Oregon's a little bit smaller, but across the board, they're still pretty stout. So I think they're going to put a lot of pressure on the Hawkeyes.
And I agree with that. I think the pressure, you're talking about pressure in the conference, it's definitely swung to Iowa and Michigan to keep pace in this conference. I mean, all year long, I mean, I'm sure Pac-12 fans get tired of hearing the Big Ten's the best conference in the country. And I agree with you. I mean, I'm a Big Ten guy through and through. But what we saw from Illinois today, and we're recording this, of course, Sunday afternoon following Illinois' loss to Loyola in the second round of the Big Ten NCAA tournament. We saw Ohio State fall to Oral Roberts in the first round. We saw Purdue fall as well. And Michigan State got beat in a game against a Pac-12 team in the first four games. So, yeah, the Big Ten certainly has shifted the pressure over to teams like Iowa and Michigan. Michigan, of course, playing without Isaiah Livers, which is going to be a blow for their chances to make a Final Four run as well. You know, it's interesting, Ryan. Eugene Amarui is a guy that, as Big Ten fans, I remember like it was yesterday. We remember him because of his time at Rutgers. And he was a matchup problem. I remember a game in Piscataway, I believe it was 2018. And he caused problems for Iowa then. And Iowa had Tyler Cook at the time, who was more of a power forward type 6'8 guy, very athletic. But I've seen Eugene this year a bit when I have been able to watch Pac-12 basketball. And he seems like he's a lot more comfortable shooting the ball than he was in 2018. He can step out. And again, I think people are talking about Garza's ability to be able to dominate the lack of size of Oregon. I think it has to be talked about, a guy like Eugene being able to pull a guy like Garza out, because Iowa wants to play a lot of man-to-man. The zone defense, if you're an Iowa fan, you know the zone defense is literally just atrocious. And so if Dana Altman can either get Fran to commit to playing more zone because of the defensive struggles or defensive mismatches, I think that plays into the hands of Oregon. And I think they can still take advantage of a man-to-man set, because I don't think Garza is comfortable, especially if you get Garza in a pick-and-pop situation. The ball screen defense is something that he really struggles with, and he gets pulled out. He's not a very good hedger. So I think Eugene might be a bigger key to this game than maybe people think. Your thoughts on Amarui?
Oh, I agree. Eugene Amarui is the straw that stirs the drink for the Ducks, man. He's an inside presence. He's an outside presence. Good three-point shooter. Very good defensive player. Plays bigger than his 6'6 frame, but at the same time can break down and guard guys smaller than him. He's been the most consistent player by far on the team. I think there's a lot of guys, though. This is just a very unique team. Oregon's a team that, you know, they always like to give these cliches where, you know, who makes the other team, you know, play the way they want them to play. You know, if Iowa can come out and dictate the terms, then I like Iowa. But if Oregon come out and make Iowa play Oregon's game, then I like Oregon, because I feel like Oregon is going to, at some point in time, going to make Iowa look slower. I just think there's some real good athletic speed on Oregon's team with size. But, you know, guys like Weiskamp, right, for you guys, number 10, you know, he's 6'6", but he, if you compare him to the 6'6 that is LJ Figueroa or Eugene Amarui, he just looks much thinner. So it's that idea I'm talking about being able to the size wise and the strength and the speed at 6'6". I think Garza is, though, such a unique player. You know, so he's a bit of a throwback in the modern game, but he can still shoot the ball from deep. He's got good touch. He's good, you know, with passing. They can set it to him in the middle, and he can see the floor pretty well. I like Oregon's chances in this. I mean, again, I'm trying to be as straightforward as possible, give Iowa as much respect as possible, but I think there's going to be a time in this game where Iowa might be a little gassed. I think if Oregon can work their magic on the defensive side, maybe turn Iowa over a little bit, maybe get Iowa running a little bit more than they want to. Not that they don't have good athletes, but I think the other real good matchup to think about is the point guard, because I really like Bohannon, right? Number 3. And he's going to have his hands full with Will Richardson. Will Richardson's a big guard, 6'4", 6'5", gets into the paint, still defends really well on the outside, shoots the ball fairly well. A lot of left-handers on this team for Oregon. So, you know, not really your average ratio of right-handers to left-handers. I think there's more lefties on the Oregon team, which is, again, just opens up the floor a little bit, especially when you go to the paint. And if you can draw Garza out and make this a little bit of a one-on-one matchup with some of the guards, I think Oregon's got some chances.
Keep in mind that Jordan Bohannon, as great of a three-point marksman as he is a liability defensively. And it's not for a lack of effort. He just lacks the athleticism to compete with the best of the best. And we saw it even last night against Grand Canyon at times. He had problems against Javon Blackshear, who, you know, very quick, athletic 5'11 point guard. But again, we're talking about a whack point guard. And so I just, you know, looking up and down at Oregon's roster, and I said this about Grand Canyon, we had a discussion earlier this week previewing the GCU game, and I had not seen as unique of a lineup, I don't think, all year in the Big Ten as what GCU brought to the table, with two guys who are 6'10 or bigger, two true centers, and then a guy who's under 6 foot, but it's got athleticism and can shoot threes. I would say the same thing about Oregon. I mean, I'm looking down up and down the roster. You're not kidding. Everybody on this roster is 6'6". I mean, I'll be honest, I did not remember Eugene Amarui being listed as 6'6", because he always played bigger. And that was, again, 2-3 years ago. So I think you're right. There's mismatches on each end. I think defensively, if you're Oregon, you watch a game like the Iowa-Michigan game in Ann Arbor, or you look at a game like Iowa-Indiana in Bloomington, when teams get up in Iowa's space, and that's tough to do because they can throw it down to Garza and he's going to take you one-on-one. But if you can get up in Iowa space, get physical with them, get them moving horizontally as opposed to vertically, Iowa can start pressing and they can start turning the ball over. It doesn't happen very often. They're a very efficient offense. But I think it's going to be interesting to see how Iowa deals with that press. And on top of that, Will Richardson is a guy Iowa's familiar with. 2018 in Madison Square Garden, Iowa played Oregon, beat the Ducks. But I believe Richardson was the only player on that team that's still there now. Iowa's got Connor McCaffrey. He played in that game. Luka Garza, of course, Joe Wieskamp, Jordan Bohannon. So a little bit of an experience, maybe an experience edge as far as these guys knowing Dana Altman's system and what he wants to do. And, of course, some experience with Amarui. But I guess it could go the other way as well.
Absolutely. You know, I think rebounding is going to be a big deal. I think, you know, if Iowa wins the rebounding matchup, you know, Dana talks about that every game, you know, like the team who wins the rebounding matchup historically in the tournament wins games. And if you look at this, you know, team, you know, down the list, I think Oregon is going to put a lot of pressure on, obviously. I mean, pretty much their whole lineup is 6'6", their point guard is 6'5". And that's gonna put some challenges on them. But I was also right there, ready for the taking. I think that, you know, I think they have a really skilled ability to get some rebounds, defensive rebounds as well. They kill it. And if you can, you know, have it limit a team to only one shot possession, I think you're really saying something this tournament. Now the bench, let's talk about just for a second here, because there's going to be some other guys coming off this bench that are going to be interesting as well. And so the point guard, the backup point guard, Amari Hardy, is another senior, played a lot, UNLV player. And then there's a freshman who plays a little bit as well. And he, I mean, I don't know if he's going to get in or not. His name is Jalen Terry. But he's from Michigan. He's a Midwest guy. And I think all three of those guys are going to play at some point in time and put some pressure on. I don't know if this lineup is going to be the 6'6 lineup the entire time. I think they're going to have to put in some of the smaller guards, maybe do some two guard lineup stuff, maybe try to have their two bigs in at the same time. I don't know. I think they're going to try to mix it up, but I can guarantee you that Amarui is going to be a guy who, if he starts making his first couple baskets, if he gets his inside-outside game working and he gets to about 20 points a game, I think Duarte is the best player on the team. I think Chris Duarte, we've talked a lot about other players, but Chris Duarte is the guy who's the most well-rounded. He's very quick. He's very good with the ball in his hands. He's good without the ball in his hands. He's really good defensively. He gets a lot of steals. He reminds me of Manu Ginobili. A lot of people say, you know, Klay Thompson or whatever. And I love how they always compare him to like NBA Hall of Famers.
Right.
But he, to me, reminds me of Ginobili in the sense that Ginobili is really hard to pin down. really hard to make do what the defense wants him to do. There's always a way around it. Duarte's that same type of player. He hits a lot of really unique shots, but once he starts rolling, he can really fill it up. And they've said that he's one of the premier three-point shooters in our league and then possibly in the country. So national media sleeps on the Pac-12 all the time. They do it in football. They do it in basketball. We're used to it out here. But even the announcers said the other day, oh, we don't really watch too much of the Pac-12. They're on late, you know. No kidding. There's some good basketball to be had out here. There's some good football to be had out here. Obviously, we're trying to get more and more and more improvement and get more eyes on it. Because there was a time in my lifetime where the Pac-12, it was Pac-10 then, but was the key or one of the key players in the national media when it comes to football and basketball. Yeah. So we'll hopefully get it rebounded. And this could be a big year for the Pac-12, the way they're shaping up right now.
How big was the departure of Peyton Pritchard? I mean, he was just spectacular. One of my favorite players to watch outside of the Big Ten Conference. How much has that hurt Oregon this year?
Well, people talked about it. Yet, you know, you asked about yesterday, how yesterday went. We hear from it from all these fan bases. Our neighbors to the north, Washington, they were all upset because they got COVID and couldn't play the Ducks, and the Ducks went to the Pac-12 championship in football and then beat USC there. And they thought, oh, well, we would have done that same thing. We just, it was because of COVID or whatever. And then they said the same thing. Oh, Ducks got it. They didn't even like to mention the fact that we were the number one team in our conference. We were in Vegas last year for the Pac-12 conference when it got shut down. And we were the number one team. Peyton Pritchard's a senior. He's playing his best. He's one of the best players in the country, the best point guard or second best point guard. He got the Bob Cousy Award winner. So, I mean, it tells you right there. And then on the ladies' side, we had the best team of all time. We're looking to win a national championship there. Both of those got canceled. So when everybody kind of talks about how great it was the Ducks used COVID, what about the year before when we got completely had their legs taken out from us when we had two all-time great players? It's amazing to think about that we had Peyton Pritchard, Sabrina Ionescu, and Justin Herbert all in the same class at Oregon at the same year. That's pretty impressive.
You know, I agree with that, and it's interesting. I think Iowa and Oregon are two very interesting programs right now because – Luka Garza could easily go down as the best player in Iowa history.
Yes.
Of course, he's the leading scorer among Power Five schools right now. And then you have on the women's side, Caitlin Clark, who's one of the most underrated women's basketball players in the country. Should have been first team All-American, was snubbed there. And Iowa has had three straight Big Ten Player of the Year winners in women's hoops. And they have one of the more dominant wrestlers of all time, Spencer Lee, who just yesterday won another national title with a torn ACL. So,
two of them.
Two of them. So, you know, I think that these two programs are meeting at very unique times, not just from a basketball perspective, but just overall these programs, these athletic departments. I do want to ask you about this. You know, you talked about Garza and how Oregon's been able to deal with his size and his presence down low. And we've seen different teams, Michigan, for instance, being one that stands out, especially last year when Luka was really starting to establish himself as a national presence. We saw Juwan Howard basically say, we're going to let you get 30, 40 points on us, but you are not teeing up from outside with J-Bo, with Joe Wieskamp, with, you know, this whole team can shoot from the outside.
Yes.
C.J. Frederick's another guy that's going to be a marksman. But we've seen the opposite tactic as well. Last year, we saw Fred Hoiberg of Nebraska basically send three guys at Luka every single time. Now, C.J. Frederick didn't play in that game, but Iowa lost the game. So there's different ways to attack Luka Garza. From what you know about Dana Altman, what do you foresee?
That's the question right now. Again, you know, I've coached basketball for 20 years, and that's the first thing I thought was, well, what do you do with this guy? You know, he's the guy, but there are other guys can hit you as well. You know, if you just, you know, I look at numbers, so 10 and 3, right? And they can kill you. And if you send that ball into Garza and you double team Garza, maybe even triple team him, you're going to leave guys open. If they start getting hot, you can't stop that. And if you let Garza do what he's going to do, that doesn't say that the other guys still won't get hot. You're going to have to move the ball around sometimes. And you start working the inside-outside game. It's just like in football when you run the ball and you can pass the ball. So, I mean, they just got it all going. And I just don't think it's going to be – I don't think Ducks are going to be able to stop Garza. I think that he's going to get 20 automatic. I think he can print almost damn near a double-double. I think, you know, it's just going to be about if those other guys can come through. I think Oregon's defense is going to have to slow the transition game down for Iowa, because when I've seen Iowa get into the transition game, then it's all she wrote, because they can really play the half court. If they start turning people over and start running and dunking and getting layups, then it's really difficult. And that's what I've seen from them this year. When they play really well, everything's firing for them. But like you said, if you can slow one part of their thing down, I went back and watched the Indiana games because I saw Indiana beat them twice. So I was like, okay, well, this Indiana's got to have something here. And I didn't really know what it was. Now, obviously, the one game was super close right down to the stretch. But that first game in January felt like Indiana had a pretty good idea of what to do with them. I also watched the Gonzaga game. Now, Gonzaga obviously is a great team, and you know, Gonzaga's beaten everybody this year, you know, and they had a great schedule. They played good competition. But, you know, I went back and looked at some of those losses, and what I saw is what you said. There's no real one way to do it. If you go up and you make Garza make the play and then they kick out and you're leaving guys wide open, that's not a recipe for disaster. If they start getting hot, and especially in the tournament, you never know when they're going to get hot. It could be a guy could be cold for the whole game. Last 8 minutes, he could pour in 20 points. So I tend to think you have to play it. The way that I see Oregon playing it is if they have one of their bigs in the game. So let's say they have Chandler Lawson, or if they have a Frank in there, then I think you got to play him straight up. I think you got to let your big try to hang with their big, and he's going to get his, I guarantee it. But I think they're going to try to foul him early or try to get in some sort of out of rhythm, right? When you don't have those guys in there and it's the 6-6 team, I think you're going to have to double him. So, and then you're going to have to make somebody else make a bucket. And that could be interesting. Yeah, I think, again, I think it all starts for Oregon in the full court zone trap. That zone trap is a very strange way they do it. They don't completely sell out. You'll see them just kind of stagger the floor. It's not like they run two guys at the guy and they make the guy give the ball up. They run it a little bit differently. And all they're trying to do is just slow down the clock a little bit and make some time go off the clock, make it a little bit harder for Iowa to get into their half-court set. But the way that Garza plays, their half court set could literally be getting it to him at the top of the key, letting him do his thing a little bit, see if he can get his post up, or kick it back out, let him post up, see if he can get it that way. If that doesn't work, then you can play the rest of the offense. I don't think anybody else in the country plays like Iowa does. I don't think they have the player to be able to do it. I mean, the way that Iowa, to me, the way Iowa runs their offense is similar to how the Knicks run in their offense in the late 90s with Patrick Ewing. You know, it's like you can get him the ball 15 feet, 18 feet from the bucket and have the ball safe in his hands. He's not going to screw up. Or you can put him on the post and try to dump it down to him 5 feet from the bucket.
Yeah, I agree with all that. This is, want to remind everybody, week 156, Brad is Brandon Thoughts from the Hawkeye of the Storm. I'm talking with Ryan Winter of Sports Chat 503. And Ryan, before we finish up our segment here, I do want to bring up the issue of COVID moving forward in this tournament, going beyond just this Iowa-Oregon matchup tomorrow. We talked about VCU having issues and obviously having to basically forfeit their game yesterday against the Ducks. Is there a chance in your mind that this thing goes south? I mean, you've got a VCU team that was staying, I'm assuming, in the same hotel as other teams that are in this tournament. I mean, there's not enough hotels in Indianapolis to house 68 different teams plus officials, I wouldn't think. They're in the same, I would even guess, same levels of these hotel rooms and passing each other in hallways. What is your concern level right now with the rest of this tournament?
Well, right. And if you go back to that, then you're talking about two teams that might have been affected, because St. Bonnie's was in that same tourney. So, and they already played their game. You know, I was watching those guys, Kenny and Charles and those guys talk about it. And they said, hey, we knew it was going to happen. We knew at some point COVID would show up, and we just didn't know where and when. The fact that it happened to that team, you know, is too bad. But imagine if it happened to Illinois as the one seed, and then Illinois doesn't get to play this game and they lose, but their whole fan base thinking that they would have won, right?
Yeah, you're right.
That's kind of the hard part for me when you have these games get canceled or whatnot, is the fan bases kind of run with it. The fan bases think, okay, well, we didn't have a chance to play, therefore we would have won that game, therefore this thing is all for naught. And asterisk, you know,
that's the worst thing for sports.
It's terrible, and it's terrible for the kids too, because they're just trying to play, and they're just trying to play whenever they get a chance to. So we saw this firsthand, obviously, this year with our football, because the way that it worked out with Washington leaving for because of COVID and having Oregon go into the Pac-12 championship, I do think it's probably going to show up again somewhere. But you might have had just this one thing because of how connected to before, and maybe going forward this bubble might hold up. I would hope that it does. I mean, it's so good having March Madness back. I mean, I'm just a sports fan. I was watching the wrestling as well. I'm just a sports fan, you know, and so March Madness is the apex to me. I mean, it is, if it's not one, it's two of the greatest time of sports in the country. And what we saw this championship week, or this first week, has just been insane. I mean, there's no brackets left. I mean, it says it all right there. So
two days in,
you know, and so I would hope that they get it cleared up. Maybe they even learn from it, but going forward, I think they're going to be okay from here on out. But it would just be a shame if something happened, you know, to, again, like a team like Gonzaga or a team like something else, where it's like you're on the, you know, precipice of an undefeated season possibility, and you get taken out by COVID. Oh, Lord.
Let's Ryan, before we go, let's give our final keys to this game tomorrow morning, which, by the way, what were your initial thoughts on the 9 a.m. start Oregon time?
Brutal.
That seemed like an odd move by the NCAA to schedule a game for the Ducks that early.
I know. And I think it's all about their eyes for, you know, the East Coast time. They don't think about the West Coast at all when it comes to this. And so they're just saying, hey, it's a noon start out East. That's perfect. I don't know how this is going to be also with this idea that it's Monday, Tuesday now, you know, having this situation where, you know, we're on a Sunday and Monday, you know, it's a little different than in the normal situation where this would have been on a Saturday, Sunday sort of deal, you know, if they had that first Thursday, Friday game. So I don't know. I think it's going to be weird. The time change is going to definitely affect them. They've been over there for a while now. They should be acclimated. It's not that big of a deal. And a lot of these schools do have practices in the morning, so it's not like it's that big of a deal. I mean, our Pac-12 conference was talking about us playing football games at 9 a.m. How would you even, I mean, think about what would the tailgate look like at 9 a.m? People are getting there at 6, 5 a.m.
Well, people here in Iowa sometimes stay the night over, and they're starting at 3, 4 a.m.
Because we have
11 a.m. games here, and I guess you guys probably do too.
They've added a couple 11 a.m. games, but most time it's just 12 o'clock or 3 o'clock start. But we've gotten hit with all sorts of 7 o'clock games, too. The West Coast is wild. I don't know why they're putting a 7 o'clock game on. It's 10 o'clock on the East Coast. But.
Well, the good news here is you have Iowa and Oregon have an exclusive broadcast for the rest of college basketball, because there are no games overlapping tomorrow morning. It's a CBS game, so I guess that's a positive for both programs. I don't think that's ever a negative.
Yeah, and it's a showcase game. You got to have something good that first game. It's a showcase game. It's going to be a good game. I think the keys to the game for me is all about the Oregon defense. If the Oregon defense can show up, slow down Iowa a little bit. I like it in the 60s. You know, if you can keep Iowa in the 60s, I think you got a shot at this thing. If you look at Iowa, they score in the 90s or score in the 80s, they win. I mean, even some of the games where they've scored in the 80s, they lost. So the key thing for me on the other end is whether or not the Hawkeyes can play the defense to stop Oregon, because Oregon's going to put the ball in the bucket. So if Oregon can score, if they can get a lot of guys going, I think that might be another key for Oregon, is to get maybe 3 or 4 guys to be productive, to kind of go against maybe the focus on guards on the other end. But again, I tend to think this is going to be a really good game, a really close game, right down to the wire. These are two very good teams. These are two teams that I think that if you were to play anywhere else in the bracket, could probably win tomorrow. So again, when you're getting to this point right now where you have these teams match up, somebody's got to win, somebody's got to lose. But I think both these teams could be very good somewhere else in the bracket and win if they needed to tomorrow.
I think the same could be said for that Illinois-Loyola game. I think Loyola seemed egregiously underseeded, and that's a shame that they were, and it's a shame for Illinois. But they, I mean, you lose, and as Iowa fans, we're not real big on the Illini, so we were okay with that result today. As far as keys for Iowa, and I've said this since day one with Luca, ever since Jack Nungy went out several weeks back, he's got nobody behind him. The cavalry's not coming at the five position, so if Garza gets in foul trouble, Fran McCaffrey has a motto that you are sitting the rest of the first half, and there are no ifs, ands, or buts about it. You are sitting. So Iowa could easily go to – we saw it yesterday. Keegan Murray got in foul trouble. Luka had to get a breather at some point, and the biggest guy on the court was Patrick McCaffrey, who's a skinny 6'8". And they were able to survive yesterday playing zone. But again, I don't think it's fair to compare Grand Canyon to Oregon. And again, athletically, I think Oregon brings a lot more to the table that's going to cause problems for guys like Garza. So if Garza gets in foul trouble, that's going to be an issue for Iowa without Jack Nungy coming in behind him. I do think Iowa, if they advance past this round, is going to have issues with big men, although Kofi Coburn's gone. But we've seen Garza struggle with other seven-footers. You think Coburn, you think Hunter Dickinson. Mitzgaard yesterday for the Antelopes gave Garza problems at times. So he can be scored on. Garza, as great as he is offensively, he is there's not really any aspect of his game defensively that I would say jumps out at me. So even though Oregon doesn't have that seven-footer anymore, I do think they can cause issues. And they're going to be able to score on Luka. I think Amarui, I go back to him. I think he's, in my opinion, the biggest key offensively for the Ducks.
I agree. And it's interesting what you said about the foul trouble. You know, Oregon's athleticism might get Luka in a little trouble. So like you said, you know, there might be, again, there's a lot of guys that can score. Another guy you want to watch out for is Eric Williams Jr. You know, he was a guy who'd kind of had some injury earlier halfway through the year, but another guy who's 6'6", can shoot the ball. He was at Duquesne. And, you know, again, these guys have played a lot of basketball. The Oregon team is very, very veteran. They have played a lot of basketball. They just haven't played a lot of it at Oregon.
Right.
There's a lot of guys on that court who've all played plenty of minutes. They just haven't played together as much. They're starting to figure it out. Again, if Duarte has the game he should have, Amari has the game he should have, then all you need is you need Will Richardson to have a good game as a point guard. You need LJ Figueroa to have a good game, or you need to have Eric Williams Jr. Somebody else pick up the pieces, and that's going to be hard for Iowa. If you have three guys on that Oregon team that all do well, score over 10 points, 15 points, whatever it might be, that's going to be a tough situation. I think that you made some great points about Iowa's offense, but Iowa's defense might be under the gun just a little bit. If Oregon's playing well, if Oregon is not making their threes and Iowa's rebounding that ball, taking the ball out of the bucket and going, man, it could be a long day for Oregon.
All right, let's finish up with some final predictions, Ryan. I know I'm putting you on the spot here. And by the way, as far as – I wanted to throw this in there, too, before we make our final score predictions for tomorrow. As much as we love Fran McCaffrey here in Iowa, no sane Iowa fan would possibly say that the coaching advantage goes to Fran. Dana Altman has proved he knows how to win in this tournament, and Fran has not. So that's one of the things to add. But with that being said, give me a final score tomorrow morning.
Well, I would like to see Oregon, like I said, if Oregon can hold Iowa to maybe under 70 or right about that number of 70, I think that Oregon could do it. I like Oregon maybe 74 to 68, something like that.
If they're able to hold Iowa to 68, I totally agree with that assessment. I'm going to go Iowa, of course. This is an Iowa show. I can't pick against the Hawks in the second round. But I'm going to go Iowa 78. I do think Oregon... I think Garza will get his, but I do see the Iowa guards struggling against this athletic group, this athletic starting lineup for Oregon. I'm going to go Oregon 76, Iowa 78. I agree. I think it's going to be a close game.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody here in Iowa is predicting an upset. We're just hoping that Iowa can break the line to get to the Sweet 16 for the first time in, 21 years. That's what we're up against here in Iowa is a chance at history. So, Ryan, we appreciate it. Subscribe to Ryan's channel, Sports Chat 503, here on YouTube for everything Oregon Ducks. And even if you're an Iowa fan, Big Ten fan, he's got some great content. So head on over there and subscribe.
Awesome.
Ryan, we appreciate you jumping on. And if we have another Iowa-Oregon matchup in college football or somewhere somewhere else, maybe women's college basketball. We'll have you back on. We appreciate it.
Appreciate you, bud. Thanks so much.
All right. Have a good day. This is Brad's Brandon Thoughts, week 156, and from the Hawkeye of the Storm.